Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim, and each week we interview leaders. They share lessons learned from their career. This week, we're continuing our conversation with Dr. Robert Quinn. If you haven't listened to the first part of this conversation, go back and listen to that episode. But Dr. Quinn has been a professor at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. He is a best-selling author. He's written 18 books in his career and has spoken to over half of the Fortune 500. And we're continuing our conversation on the subject, purpose-driven leadership. And he had some great thoughts to share last week, and looking forward to our continued conversation with Bob today. You've written 18 books in your career, and you've had a lot of, and one of the titles, and I haven't read this one, I've read the first book that I read of yours was Deep Change, and I loaned it out to somebody, and I tried to find it the other day, and it hasn't come back. So I need to write, somebody told me they did this with their library, wrote stolen from the library of, and then put your name so you get it back. But anyway, so I ordered another copy, but there's a title that that I was reading, Building the Bridge as You Walk on It. And I was thinking, I haven't read the book, but that's an interesting title. And it seems like kind of where we are right now is kind of building the bridge as we walk on it. Not sure what the future is. I don't know if there's, you know, some relevance to where we are today with that book, but I know you wrote it a number of years ago.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about that book is where the title came from. I was at a small company that was a very successful company. And I was there with a doctoral student, so the doctoral student could write a case study about this company. And so we went to the first meeting with the CEO, who I knew very well. And the doctoral student, in essence, said, how did you become such a great company? And this CEO said, well, you know, we had this challenge and we worked really, really hard and put this strategy in place and we were smart. And with that hard work, we became the great company you see today. And I leaned forward and said, that's a lie. And the CEO looked like I'd slapped him in the face. And I said, you know, you started out, you had this purpose, you had this strategy. Strategy A didn't work. Everything you did got worse. So you went to strategy B. That made it still worse. That led you to this insight. You had strategy C. And then all of a sudden this took off, and over here this took off, and you brought B over to this thing, and then this happened. And he got a huge smile on his face. And he looked at me and he said, and at the doctoral student, and he said, yeah, the truth is we built the bridge as we walked on it. Hmm. Now, that is such an interesting story. Why did he tell the first story to the doctoral student? Because that's the story we're all expected to tell. If you're a success, how did you get there? I was smart and I worked hard. That's the story that we're expected right to tell. That creates a linear image that simply isn't true. The fact is that if you're going to build an organization, you're walking in deep uncertainty all the time. You don't know what you're doing, and you're learning as you go. You're building the bridge as you walk on it. But you can't say that because you have to pretend to be smart. And so the question is, how do I learn in uncertainty? And the answer is what we said. You clarify constantly what the highest purpose is, and then you move one foot forward into the dark, and then another one. And you ask yourself, what did I just learn? And you make adjustments, and you take another step. That is not what the textbooks say. Now think about this pandemic that we're in. We are and will be in total uncertainty. The entire economy will be turned upside down. People will go into panic. They'll be full of anxiety. They'll go into fight or flight, and it'll be very unproductive. And a few people will say, no problem. What result do I want to create? What's my highest purpose here? And they'll take one step into the darkness and then another, and they'll keep adjusting as they try to find that purpose. And other people will join them, and great things will happen. Right next to them, there'll be disaster on their right, disaster on their left. Mm. But you know, that's what building the bridge as we walk on it is all about. And people that write leadership books don't want to ever understand or say that. And managers, and it's a good reason, you won't sell any books because managers don't want to hear that.
Right? Right.
Give me the silver bullet, the sure. one thing I can do, and I'll be absolutely successful the rest of my life. Tell me what I need to know, not how to learn.
That's great. That's great advice. Yeah, I heard one executive recently said that kind of their whole thing for their company is to have a 30-day plan, and you plan out 30 days. This is what we're going to do, and you adjust, and then at the end of that 30 days, you figure out the next 30 days and try to figure out any other thoughts around that. And I'm sure you've gotten calls from executives that are concerned and trying to figure things out. What are some of the things that you're telling them?
Having that 30-day plan is perfectly okay with me. My question to those same executives is, what's your highest purpose? Hmm. And they never know. And they always give some, you know, some of them say profit, some of them say survival, some of them say something more acceptable. But they don't know because they've never done the work. And the question is, what is the highest purpose of this company? And that's not profit. That's a survival answer. What is the contribution? What is it that ignites every single person in this company? They never know because they never do that work. I'm being very strong saying never, of course, the exceptions, but the majority don't. They don't even understand the question. But the moment that I start to become a purpose-driven leader, I first envision totally committed workforce. Most people don't. They envision people who have to be controlled because they don't want to work. Mm. That's the whole notion of hierarchical theory and economic theory. It's the principal agent problem. But I'm going to a new place. My new place is I'm going to envision totally engaged people. If I envision that, then how do I discover how do I discover the purpose of this organization? And the answer is I do a ton of listening and hold a ton of dialogues until it starts to crystallize for me what the highest collective purpose really is. It's almost never known or stated because no one ever does that work. If I discover it, then the question is, how do I bring it into reality? And the answer is, I make it the arbiter of every decision. I was visiting a company, and a bunch of us were sitting around the table, and this mid-level woman said, I just came out of a meeting with my boss. And he said, we're going to do X. And she said, we are not. We're not going to do that. Now, every head snapped at that table when they heard that. And then she explains, she said, he wanted to do this. I told him that's not our purpose. The highest purpose of this company is this, and we can't do that. My boss's response was, oh, yeah, you're right. Mm. Now, at that moment, the CEO leaned in. He was sitting next to me, and he said, see what I mean? When the purpose is the arbiter of every decision, that means every person's empowered. The entire system is learning and contributing, and everybody's going in the right place. Well, that's a profoundly powerful image. Very few companies, teams, organizations, units, groups ever benefit from that because they don't have a leader that does that.
So that whole idea of being transparent with those that you're leading, for that CEO to admit, yeah, I forgot what was obvious to somebody sitting next to me at a different level. They still had that in mind, but I forgot it. Is that part of what you've seen kind of overall with the CEOs that you've worked with, the ability to take from somebody who's not their boss, somebody that's managing up to say, hey, you're missing something that's really important?
Yeah, I think when a person grows from manager to leader, they suddenly become an integration of contrasting virtues. They're incredibly strong and very humble. They're tough and full of love. They're stable and willing to change. They're engaged, but willing to be reflective, right? They have enormous behavioral complexity because they can integrate values that are normally contrasting values. Most of us become single variable maximizers, or what Bateson called schismogenic thinkers. The moment we latch on to a purpose, any purpose, and then we pick a goal, the goal is profit, then we become schismogenic, cut away all the other things. And initially, we start to succeed. And then we cross a tipping point, and then everything starts to go wrong, and we apply the strategy with greater intensity, causing greater failure, and we go into a vicious cycle. And this happens to every one of us with regularity in life, because we can't see the whole ecology of value and virtue. We don't have the ability to enlarge and learn in real time. But when we become purpose-driven, when we start living from contributive goals instead of ego goals, all of that changes. Our ability to do those things increases. And so when you listen to those purpose-driven CEOs, almost everyone will tell you their version of the expert story. You know, I could reduce all my problems to one word, expert. Now, that was his story. But everyone has a version of that story, of discovering they're not the center of the world, and that you and I learning together is a much more powerful system than me telling you what to do. Now, there's always a place for hierarchy. There's a need for hierarchy. But if that's all you see, you are blind. And you're eventually going to get into trouble.
Really good. You told a story, and this kind of applies back to it, about your daughter having an experience where it was a negative experience, but something positive came out of it. And could you tell that story? I love that story. And it's
at the heart of that whole purpose argument. She was getting older. She was single. She was living in Washington, D.C. And she was getting very discouraged because she now wanted to be married. But her conclusion was the only men left on the earth that were her age were pigs. You know, there were just nobody left. And then all of a sudden, Prince Charming showed up, and she was so excited. And after a few months, the phone rang, and she's talking to my wife, and I could tell what the conversation was. This guy just dumped her, and she's devastated and angry. And, you know, she was our firstborn child, and most firstborn children share a common need. If they're miserable, they want you to be miserable too. And so she said, I'm coming home this weekend. I thought, oh, no. And her mother said, you're the father. You go to the airport. I pick her up. She gets in the car. She doesn't say, hello, how are you? She says, that no good, dirty, da, 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 da. And 5 minutes later, takes a breath, and I say, are you problem solving or purpose finding? She didn't even hear me. Second time, third time, you know, by the time we get to the driveway, she does it a fourth or fifth time. And I say, are you problem solving or purpose finding? And she looks at me and she says, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I wrote that letter to your brother about the difference between problem solving and purpose finding. And I sent you a copy. She said, this is the real world. I said, well, I think it applies to the real world. And so by now we're in the house, and I pull out a sheet of paper, and it says Robert Quinn Life Statement. And she rips it out of my hand. She looks at it, and then she slows down. She starts reading. She looks up, and she said, when you feel bad, you read this? And I said, no, when I feel bad, I rewrite it. It's been rewritten hundreds of times. She looks at it again. She said, do you think I could write one of these? And I said, I'm sure you can. And that's when the first miracle happened. She disappeared into the bedroom, and for a day and a half, she worked on that document. And the miracle was I did not have to suffer. She got on the plane. She went back to D.C., and 3 days later, an email came, and she said, he called me. And so I wrote him this letter. I read the letter, and the letter was incredibly authentic and vulnerable. Here's how I felt when I met you. Here's how I felt in the middle. Here's how I felt when you dumped me. And it was astoundingly transparent. And then she wrote, but my roommate said, you can't give this to him. Now that's very, very traditional wisdom. You can't give this to him. Now there's a good reason. The reason is this letter is telling the truth. You can't tell the truth to some guy who's dumped you. Dating is a marketplace. Dating is business, right? You have to be tough. You have to deceive people. And she said, what my roommates didn't understand is that what he thought didn't matter. Now, wait a minute. 3 days ago, what he thought caused her life to disintegrate. Now she's saying what he thinks doesn't matter. What in the world has happened here? She's clarified her purpose. She's internally directed. She's more caring than she's ever been. And she's willing to learn. She's incredibly strong. So she can tell the truth because she's centered and it's the truth. So what he thinks doesn't matter. And her roommates can't comprehend that because they're in transactional theory, the theory of business. Well, the interesting thing is a short time later, she was promoted for the first time, then promoted again. Why in the world is she promoted? This is a story about dating. And the answer is because she's now a leader. And that organization needed leadership. She's coming to work. She's got the same dresses on, has the same face, talks in the same language, but she's not the same person. So that's a really important story because it's about every one of us. It's about who we are and it's about our potential.
Yeah. I love that story. That's a, because I think we can all relate. We've been in those situations. You've written 18 books, and I know I've asked other authors this, you know, pick the top, and I wouldn't say your top three favorites, but maybe your top three that you think would be most relative to today and kind of what people are experiencing, any that you think they should start with, and then they can finish the rest of the 18 as they go along.
Well, I guess I'd say that in today's situation, in the middle of this pandemic, that there are some that really are appropriate. And the first one, I think, is the one you read, Deep Change, which basically helps us understand that there's incremental learning, there's transformational learning, and you and I can engage in transformational learning, and here's how to do that. The second, I think, is a book called Lift, The Fundamental State of Leadership. It talks about how you can ask those four questions, and it buttresses everything with research to show why it's legitimate. But it's a basic, simple model there. And in this pandemic, everybody can benefit from applying that model. And I think the third one I would suggest is the one that was just published. It's called The Economics of Higher Purpose, How to Create a Purpose-Driven Organization. And even if you're not running an organization, it's a book that starts with that story about my daughter and looks at personal purpose, the research on personal purpose, the impacts of personal purpose, and then takes that to the organization. And it exposes, we call them 8 counterintuitive steps. They're simple steps, but they're outside normal management thought. They're outside the ego. And they're incredibly powerful, and they apply to a marriage, to any relationship. So I think Deep Change, Lift, and The Economics of Higher Purpose If you live through those three, I think you'd have a very powerful dose of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you also check out your TED Talks and your Google Talk, love those. And those are great to view. Outside of work, Bob, what do you do to recharge?
I love to recharge by doing work. That is, I believe that writing, because, you know, I spent a lot of time in organizations helping people think about what their challenges are. But I love to come back and write about those experiences around my purpose. That's very recharging. In terms of recreation, I love to play golf. It's not a competitive golf. It's about being totally focused. That's what happens to me on the golf course. And I can't blame someone else for throwing me a bad pass. And it's an enormous mental discipline. And it renews me to have that focus. There are personal things I do. I keep a gratitude journal. It has enormous impact on my daily renewal. Can't say enough about that. And then I spend a lot of time with the family trying to engage in really meaningful experiences with them. And when that works, that's wonderful. It's hard work, but when it works, it's wonderful.
That's great. So if somebody would want to learn more about you and your work, what's the best way for them to find that information?
There's two. I think they can read the normal stuff, the books we just talked about so far. But 2 years ago, we did something that some people have found to be very useful. At the University of Michigan, if you go to the Executive Education website, there's a program called Becoming Who You Really Are. And the way it works is I made 100 videos, 3 minutes each. And if you sign up for the course, every day you get a 3-minute video. And then there are two questions. Question one is, listening to that story, because every video is a story, what principle do you see in it? Not what did Quinn say, but what do you see in it? Given the principle you've identified, what can you do today to better live that principle? Now, if you go through with a cohort, which most people do, then on Friday you answer another question, and that is, of the 5 experiments I ran this week, which one was most powerful? And you write a 1-paragraph description of that, and then that gets shared with everybody else in your cohort. What happens over the 100 days is a new perspective becomes available. If you go through with people in your own team or organization, a second level of payoff occurs. You begin to create a common set of images. One woman said, I was in a meeting with my boss. We were with a very angry customer. It was going really bad when I suddenly blurted out, we have to stop and wash the flag. Now that was from a story I told. The boss immediately understood that. And they changed their strategy instantaneously, and it came out very, very well. And she said, that's when I realized what it meant to be creating a culture together, that going through those stories, creating those common images, is not only leadership development, it's organization development. And so for either individuals or people who are trying to get groups of people to move forward, that's a very painless but very mind-stretching experience, and we've had lots of positive feedback about it. So that might be something that people would be interested in as well.
Sure. And for your blog and other writings, it's roberteaquin.com. Is that the best
website? Or you can type in all one word, thepositiveorganization.wordpress.com. It'll come up there as well.
Great. Any parting advice that you'd give a leader?
Well, I'm glad you asked that as a way to close. I think that we're all having a common experience right now. It's the biggest event since World War II. And every day I'm in some Zoom meeting, having some conversation, a lot like this one usually. And the last 2 days, I've had two people who are in education. They said, I've been talking to teachers and they're crying when I talk to them. Well, I don't think that's just about teachers. I think that people are in great anxiety. And it's very understandable. But what we've just talked about is a way to turn the anxiety into positive energy that makes you better as an individual and makes other people better, makes the world better. So I think our conversation today is very, very timely. And my advice would be, if you're feeling a lot of uncertainty and a lot of pain, you know, listen to this podcast one more time. I'll read some of that material and clarify that purpose. Start moving. Everything will start getting better. You know, if you have a life trauma like this one, but a more specific one at a different time, it distorts your life narrative. And what happens is you shut down. You usually end up on a psychologist's couch and you're depressed. There are hundreds of therapies that psychologists use, but the common denominator is clarification of purpose and values. The moment you clarify your purpose and values, you get off the couch, you're empowered. And so my final piece of advice, I guess, would be understand those four questions I talked about. Ask them rigorously of yourself. It's hard work to answer those questions. Get them answered. And then do what comes to you, because what comes to you will be very, very positive.
Really good stuff. I'm going to go back and listen to this podcast a couple of times myself. It's good information. No, I'm always encouraged when I listen to you. You've got a great way of communicating and definitely appreciate just all that you've shared today and looking forward to reading your next book, and definitely wish you continued success in your writing and speaking and influencing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me do this.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.